Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Tattered Cover. We're so excited to welcome Madonna Booter in with her new book, which is creating a great deal of excitement, as can be evidenced by your presence this evening. This is just a fabulous turnout. So we're excited to hear what she has to say. From the time she grew up as a privileged youngster in St. Louis, Missouri, riding American saddlebred horses, it's just really a thrill to have her here from that time that she grew up struggling with what her vocation was when she made her own red felt skirts, keeping a date waiting, and dated someone at Notre Dame, to coming through her vocation and wondering what John the 23rd would think about her wearing a swimsuit, to doing marathons. So I'm so excited to have her here tonight, and let's welcome her and hear about her adventures straight from her.
I know not all of you are triathletes in this room, but how many are? Raise your hands. That's not hardly even half. Well, that's interesting. Another interesting question, how many are Catholics? That's a little less. Have any of you heard anything about Catholic schools? All right. Well, I have to say that I never had my hand slapped with a ruler. My father was not a Catholic. In fact, his father was dead against Catholics. And his father, my grandfather, dearly loved children, but he only had one son and no daughter. So when my father became interested in my mother, whom he discovered playing the role of Shylock in The Merchant of Venice, he was absolutely taken off his feet when he found out it was a woman playing so convincingly that role, that male role, and a wicked one at that. So he began dating her, and she was so beautiful and so innocent that she just captivated my grandfather's heart. So finally he did allow his son to marry a Catholic. So he was doomed from there on, and you'll have to read the rest of the book. But as far as the nuns go, I was a free spirit, I guess I still am, and I love to play games, and when I went to the public school, I did not have homework. It was in the era where you learned through the Dewey system, which I think was really no learning at all, because they believed that you just learned when you were ready. But we aren't all ready at the same time either. And I can remember being in the fifth grade, looking at the alphabet around the eaves of the classroom, totally bored, but wondering, I am 10 years old, and I don't know those things in order. How am I going to do a phone book or a dictionary unless I learn those? So 10 minutes, I had it down. But to think, this was fifth grade. Kids nowadays know the alphabet before they even get into school. So much for the Dewey system, but I got beyond that. And so life goes on. And it was when I got to Maryville University, actually via the horse shows, because in St. Louis, Maryville had the Maryville Horse Show, which was, a benefit for them. But everybody in St. Louis who had show horses and were into equitation turned out for those shows. So naturally, it was a move from grade school, high school, to Maryville University. But when our friend mentioned Notre Dame, one of my dates invited me to the Notre Dame prom, which was a train ride from St. Louis to, you know, Indiana. It was a weekend, but I had to leave on Friday to get there for the celebrations. So that meant skipping a class. Well, I was carpooled with one of the sister's nieces. And there is such a thing as jealousy. Ever heard of it? And I think that she was jealous that I had this invitation to go to Notre Dame. So she squealed on me to her, well, this was the Madams of the Sacred Heart, by the way, and her aunt happened to be the dean. So I got called into the dean's office the next Monday. Where were you Friday? Well, I was on the train to Notre Dame. Well, what were you doing in Notre Dame? Well, I was attending the ball I was invited to. You mean you skipped class for a frivolous thing like that? And she just laid into me. So I sat there and listened to her. And I said, well, you know, I was very religious in attending classes and not cutting for being or playing sick. So I thought I had that coming. But she said, for such a frivolous matter? I said, you know what? You're not the only college here in St. Louis. That shut her up. And I didn't want to tell my parents about what happened. And so instead, I flattered my father, who was a graduate of Washington University, where he gained his law degree, and said, Daddy, you know, I've been thinking it over, and I think I'd really like to graduate from your university. Oh, thrilled to death. I don't think they ever found out why I wanted to do that. But that was another transition. All boys instead of all girls, well, practically, because we were living next to the fraternities, and it was a round of being rushed by sorority sisters and dated by fraternity brothers and all this stuff. But it was actually when I left the public school after sixth grade, because this is interesting. In the day and age when I grew up, if a non-Catholic married a Catholic, that spouse had to agree to allow the children to be reared Catholic. Well, my father wanted my mother so badly, he agreed, but my grandfather twisted him a little bit. So I was 5 years old until my mother started to instruct us on her own. And Daddy, since we only lived less than half a mile from the public school, insisted that we go to the public school, which I did until through sixth grade. But in sixth grade, even back then, they started dating. I mean, not dating, but having the girl and boy parties, you know, birthday parties and things like that. And so when I'd come home from the party, my parents would ask me, and what did you do? Well, I said, well, this time we played, let me see. They call it spin the milk bottle. Anybody know what that is? Sister does. Okay. Well, what's that? Well, we sat in a circle, and somebody was elected to get in the middle and with his or her eyes closed, and they spun the milk bottle, and wherever it had stopped, when they opened their eyes, they got to go and kiss that person. Oh. Okay. Then the next time there was a girl-boy party, and what did you do then at the party? Oh, well, this time we played snipe. Well, what's snipe? Well, that's when it's kind of like the opposite of hide-and-go-seek. It's where everybody hides, and one person tries to go and find somebody, and that first somebody they find, they kiss. Oh. All right. Well, we'll have to think this over. I said, think what over? Well, we're not sure. Because they didn't bother to explain about the birds and bees to me. I was perfectly naive, and I thought, well, that was all right. They used to kiss me occasionally, anyway, besides spank me. So they decided that it would be easier to send me to an all-girls school. That was the answer. So I had my choice between Visitation Academy, which was run by the Visitation Nuns, in which I received my formal Catholic instruction and was baptized at age 10. But I had to go there because they were cloistered, and it was a dungeon of a building, a red brick castle-like building with green guttering because it had been copperized after the weathering, and gargoyles over the front entrance and a belfry, and the long, dark, musty smell of the corridors, wooden. So it wasn't a very inviting place to be, but the sister who taught us was a very, very warm individual. So I did have an introduction to the visitation side. The other side was Mary Institute, where all of the girls of the high society went, and I considered them more or less snobs. And that wasn't down my line either. So I had a bad, hard decision to make right off the bat. Do I choose the snobs, or do I choose the dungeon? Well, the interesting thing is that for Mary Institute, I had to take an entrance exam, which I was perfectly confident I would fail, because being in the public school with no homework and no formal instruction but the Dewey system, I didn't think I would know enough to pass the entrance exam. But a week or two later, my mother informed me that Mary Institute said that I would be eligible to go to Mary Institute. I said, oh no, it's my decision again. What do I do, Lord? And I decided, no, I'll take the dungeon over the snobs. And, oh, what a transition that was. Because not only I walked in late to begin with in seventh grade, and the sister had her back turned, assigning homework for grammar that had us diagramming these sentences. I looked at that blackboard. I said, what is that all about? So when the bell rang, everybody else jumped up to leave, and I opened this big wooden desk, and the tears just came out. And she knew something was wrong, so she came over to my side, and she said, what's the matter, darling? I said, I don't know what you're talking about up there. It's all Greek to me. Oh, she said, well, not to worry. I have study hall at 3 o'clock today. You can come up and I will explain it to you. I said, study hall? She said, yes. Well, instead of being able to play after school, we went to study hall, had to be quiet for a whole hour sitting there doing our homework. So I thought, geez, I really am in the dungeon now. So I saw one other girl go up to her, and she sat on this platform in this big desk overlooking study hall, making sure everybody was quiet or helping anybody who wanted to come up. So when that girl started to come back, I thought, okay, she didn't get slaughtered, so I'll go up too. And I stood up, and the sister gave me a very welcoming nod. So I came up to her, sat by her side, and she very gently explained how to diagram these sentences. Well, before long, it became play for me. I would diagram until it was coming out of my ears. But yeah, I definitely developed a crush on her. And I thought, if that's what these sisters are all about, and they can help and take individual interest in somebody like me, then that's what I'd like to do with my life. And so this was at age 14. I already knew what I wanted to do. But my mother was beginning to pick up. Oh, my grandfather was really upset when I chose to go to this Catholic school taught by nuns. So after 6 weeks, however, he noticed a change in me. And I overheard him say to my parents, and he refused to call the sisters by the right name, or the building, or the school, whatever. So he said to my parents, you know, that hesitation comes making a lady out of her yet. So that was his way of approving that I was learning something at this Catholic all-girls school. And so after dinner, their influence was really running pretty deep, and I loved to spend the free time after class going to the chapel to make a visit. And I dragged some friends along, and we pray for about 10, 15 minutes, and then go about our way before study hall. And this one time, my closest friend, it was rather a sophisticated, tall girl. I was tall, but I think she was a bit taller. And they had a veil box outside the chapel door, because you were supposed to wear veils in those days before you went. They were just mesh, white and black mesh veils. And she just had such a funny flair about her. So she went and picked a veil off, slapped it on her head before going into the chapel. And it was a white veil she chose, with a huge ink spot on the back of it. And I just broke out in gales of laughter. And when we got into the chapel, it did not cease. And there was an extern sister up in the balcony trying to pray. And all of a sudden, she'd hear this titter. And we decided to separate. Instead of all kneel together, one would go at that corner, one would go in the back, one would either go up to the front and in the back from there. So we really separated ourselves so we wouldn't, you know, continue to be convulsed. But one titter triggered another, and so it was pretty audible. And the sister decided she couldn't pray with this going on. So she came down, and she tapped the one girl up front on the shoulder, and I could ask her, and asked her, you know, if she was laughing, and I could see the head go like this. Well, then she went over to the next one, and I could see the head go like this. Well, the last one she chose, probably because they thought I was the most innocent, was asked, but all three of the others had shook their head no, and it was obvious that somebody who was left. So I had to confess. Out of the chapel. Well, because I had to go out, they all decided to join me. But we gave ourselves a little bit of time to get over it, and then we went back in the chapel. But those experiences were just really very enriching. And so that's how I developed my vocation. And after dinner at home, I set up a little altar made out of a shoebox and little candles, birthday candles on either side, and holders to make a little altar for myself, and I would pray in the dark up there with the candlelight. Well, my mother did not think I was being very sociable, and she felt kind of shut out because, you know, that was supposed to be family time after dinner. Nowadays, they're scattered hither and yon. So she did begin to suspect that I did have some change going on. So when she thought maybe she would explain to me how wonderful it was to be a mother and a wife. Now, that's as first as I got about the man and woman. And I was 14, so I listened. And I listened. But it wasn't very thorough. And she said, "Darling, you don't know what a wonderful thing it is to hold a child to your breast." I said, "Oh, God." Well, then she said, "You haven't even dated yet." Well, I thought, you know, 14, why should I have started to date yet? But I'll go along with the game. That's not going to change my mind. I didn't say that out loud, of course. So I started dating my girlfriend's two brothers, and then it kept on going from that. So by the time I was graduated from Washington University, one of my suitors was very, very clever, because I usually had a way of distracting them at the door instead of giving them a goodnight kiss. But this one decided he would give me his diary to read. And I thought, well, that was a very private thing for him to do. But when I got to the tail end of the diary, I understood why he wanted me to read it. And it was practically a proposal. And I thought, oh, God. You know, I have a year to teach kindergarten, not first grade yet, and I'm at the crossroads. I know that. I'm going to have to make a decision. So it was at that point that he was as close as any one of them came. But you know, you got to find out about the rest of it in the book. How many of you have read it through and through yet? Okay. The rest of you are in for a surprise then.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.